Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Good morning. Breaking overnight, giving a boost. The FDA approves an extra dose of the Pfizer vaccine for tens of millions, including older Americans and others at high risk. So how soon will we see those shots in arms? And what about the millions who've received other vaccines? We'll have the very latest. Border crisis. The Biden administration reveals thousands of migrants at that bridge camp near Texas have actually been allowed to enter the U.S. despite this warning just days ago.
If you come to the United States illegally, you will be returned.
Inside the major reversal that's now leading to new controversy, chaos, and confusion this morning. Flood fears. 35 million people up and down the East Coast waking up to the threat of powerful storms today. Dangerous flash flooding expected in parts of the Northeast, still recovering 3 weeks after Ida. Al's got everything you need to know. Manhunt intensifying. Authorities in Florida bring in dive teams to help search for Gabby Petito's fiancé, the only person of interest in what is now a homicide investigation.
We are trying to cover every acre in this preserve.
This morning, new details on the search and what's believed to be the last sighting of the couple together. All that plus $500 million mystery, a new twist in that infamous art heist in Boston, the largest ever, that has police concerned it could remain unsolved forever. And dog on the diamond, a minor league baseball game brought to an unusual halt.
Oh, he wanted it.
Yeah.
He wanted the baseball.
The rookie move that threw players and umpires a curve. Today, Thursday, September 23rd, 2021.
From NBC News, this is Today with Savannah Guthrie and Hoda Kotb. From Studio 1A in Rockefeller Plaza.
Hey guys, welcome to Today. It is a Thursday morning. So happy that you guys are starting it with us. And Savannah, we are starting off with that breaking news. The FDA authorizing Pfizer's booster shot for older adults, for frontline workers and others at high risk for COVID.
And today the CDC will vote to pin down the specifics of just who can get that extra shot. Still a lot of questions this morning, though, about just what this all means, including where and when people can get their extra dose.
We will talk to Dr. Ashish Jha in just a moment. But first, NBC's Stephanie Gost joins us now with the very latest on this. Hey, Steph, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Hunter. So first of all, this only applies to people who got the Pfizer vaccine. They then have to fit that criteria, older than 65 or at high risk. That includes people who work at hospitals, but also grocery store workers, teachers. They all qualify, but they can't come down to vaccination centers like this one just yet. The CDC has to release that additional guidance, but the FDA, with their decision, has paved the way for millions of Americans to get that third shot.
Breaking overnight, the FDA authorizing Pfizer's COVID vaccine booster, making millions of Americans immediately eligible to receive a third shot. Among those who can get the extra dose of protection, people 65 and older, those at high risk for severe illness, and people who are frequently exposed to COVID at their jobs, like healthcare workers, school teachers, and grocery store employees. The third Pfizer dose must come at least 6 months after the second shot. The FDA's move does not apply to those who received the Moderna or Johnson & Johnson vaccines. President Biden initially announced last month that boosters would be available for everyone starting this week.
The plan is for every adult to get a booster shot 8 months after you got your second shot.
Many experts say the administration's messaging on boosters has been confusing.
I'm hearing somewhere between total and complete confusion. People hear these different messages coming out. They see the companies announcing that their boosters work, and they're really mixed up.
An unknown number of people have already gotten unauthorized booster shots with little oversight to stop them. Dr. Peter Grinspoon, a primary care physician at Mass General, says he's been bombarded by patients who want an extra dose.
A lot of people are asking,
how could I portray myself as immunocompromised? And, you know, it puts you in a little bit of an awkward position.
As millions of vaccinated Americans wait for a booster, people in many other parts of the world still haven't gotten their first shot. At a virtual COVID summit Wednesday, President Biden announced the U.S. will distribute an additional 500 million Pfizer vaccines to low-income countries for a total of 1.1 billion.
To beat the pandemic here, we need to beat it everywhere. And I made and I'm keeping the promise that America will become the arsenal of vaccines.
But medical experts say billions more doses are needed to tackle the problem around the globe.
There is some good news on the numbers front and a couple of different fronts. The CDC, for the second week in a row, is predicting that hospitalizations will go down over the next 4 weeks. And our NBC News data team also says that we passed the peak of this latest surge, fueled by the Delta variant, last week. 7 out of the 8 last days, cases have gone down. That's the longest sustained decrease in cases in 3 months. Savannah?
All right, Stephanie, thank you. Joining us now with more, Dr. Ashish Jha, the dean at Brown University School of Public Health. Hi, Dr. Jha. So the FDA approved the booster for the elderly and the vulnerable. How quickly do you think this will mean shots can get in arms?
Hey, good morning, Savannah. Thanks for having me here. The CDC is going to vote on this today, specify what exactly we mean by medically vulnerable. And my guess is tomorrow, Monday, it should happen in the next few days. So it's going to be very, very soon.
A lot of folks are disappointed that it wasn't more widely authorized, this booster shot, for basically every adult or person over 16 who is eligible for it. The Biden administration clearly thought, we're trying to lower infections. We're trying to get ahead of the game. The FDA said, well, the vaccines are still working to reduce hospitalization and death. So it's sort of like, where do you come down on that argument? I mean, could you break the back of the Delta variant and stop the mutations if you reduced infection? And doesn't that argue for a booster shot?
It would be very helpful if we reduce infections across the country. There are two parts of this that I think are important. First of all, we do have some other tools, testing, indoor masking, as ways to keep the infection numbers low. But also, you know, we don't have that much data yet for young, healthy people. And even if we did, most of them are not yet 6 months out. Again, remember, you have to wait at least 6 months. And you should wait 6 months, by the way. You're going to get a much better immunologic benefit if you wait 6 months. So my take is, we start with high-risk people now. Over the next couple of months, we're going to get more data on young, healthy people. My suspicion is, we'll see what the data says, that they will need boosters. And I do expect that most Americans will end up getting a booster before the end of the year or certainly by early part of next year.
Well, so the FDA can revisit this. Can I ask you a question? I know just from talking to folks, some people, they had Moderna, but now it's only Pfizer that you can get the booster shot. They're in the category of people who are eligible for a booster now. Can you mix and match like that?
Yeah, this is a great question. Immunologically, you can. There's that, all the evidence from other vaccines suggests it would be fine. We haven't studied it for this vaccine yet. We will, and we're going to get more results in the next couple of weeks. So what I'm saying to folks who got Moderna, like me, is to wait a few more weeks. We'll have more data both on mixing and matching and on Moderna boosters.
Okay, let's talk about kids. We got some good news, some data from Pfizer that showed the safety and efficacy of the vaccine for the 5 to 11 age group. I know that's an age group that you and I care deeply about with our kids. How soon do you think that might actually be approved, where we start seeing kids get their vaccines?
Yeah, this is a great question. It depends completely on how the FDA decides to treat this. If they treat this as an urgency, which I think it is, they should be able to review it and get an authorization out in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And in that context, we should be able to get the first shot in by Halloween. If they decide to go slowly and take their time, it could end up obviously going much longer than that. I hope they act quickly on this.
Let's go really just quickly. We have a few seconds left. We heard Stephanie Goska, our correspondent, saying that case numbers have dropped. We are seeing declines in the last week or 2 weeks. Do you consider that a blip, or is this a sign that maybe we've turned the corner once again?
Well, we've definitely turned the corner on the horrible summer surge we saw in the Deep South. And that is terrific, because that's what was fueling it. There's still states in the country, in the Midwest, in the Great Plains, that are seeing increases. I worry that we're not done. But as a nation, I think the worst is behind us, at least for this surge.
Oh, from your lips to God's ears, as they say. Dr. Jha, thank you, as always. We appreciate it. Also this morning, there is new controversy surrounding the migrants at that makeshift camp near the Texas border. While some have been sent back to Haiti, officials now admit thousands are being allowed to enter the U.S. to seek asylum. NBC's Morgan Chesky has the very latest on this development. Hey, Morgan, good morning.
Hey, Hoda, good morning. And overnight, we do have some new numbers from DHS. They tell us more than 1,400 migrants have now been deported back to Haiti. Meanwhile, here in Del Rio, these are just a few of the hundreds of Texas state troopers lining the banks of the Rio Grande to prevent any further crossings. And they tell me another group of migrants, numbering in the hundreds, is making their way towards this direction where thousands still remain beneath that bridge. This morning, our closest look yet at what's become the nation's newest border flashpoint. It's a place where thousands of desperate Haitians wait and hope. Their journey doesn't end here. Our crew given rare access to the camp, where nearly 10,000 migrants have already been removed through processing or deportation.
And they may be far from home, but even in the shadow of a border bridge, these men, women, and children are trying to create whatever normal lives they can, building shelters, crossing their fingers. Everyone's future here, incredibly uncertain.
In Washington, President Biden facing backlash from his own party over the actions of Border Patrol agents on horseback, now under investigation for how they handled migrants.
We are following the Trump policy.
The White House rejecting that claim.
The Trump administration approach to immigration was inhumane and was immoral. That's why we need to put a new policy in place, and we need Congress to pass that policy.
Homeland Security officials say thousands of migrants who were under that bridge have already been released inside the United States. Many given notices to appear at an immigration center within 60 days to get a court date for asylum hearings. Back on the border, State Trooper Chris Olivares watches and waits.
Do you see this problem letting up?
No, Morgan, and the numbers have not decreased at all.
For now, Texas State Troopers' cars line the riverbanks. And with hundreds of additional migrants potentially on the way, the message is clear.
We have units on standby. We are prepared for any surge of migrants that will come across. And we can mobilize at a moment's notice.
Prepared for thousands like we saw over the weekend.
Exactly.
And despite having this particular crossing secure here, agents tell me one of their biggest concerns is that by surging so many resources to this one location, they're opening up other gaps on the border that could be taken advantage of by those criminals, perhaps trafficking drugs, humans, and that creates a serious concern here at the border.
Yeah.
Hoda.
All right, Morgan Chesky for us there in Del Rio, Texas. Morgan, thank you.
We welcome Craig back from assignment. You're following the Gabby Petito case this morning.
Yes, Savannah. Hoda, good morning. Good morning to you as well. Crews are headed back out this morning to continue scouring that large nature preserve in Florida for any sign of the 22-year-old's fiancé, Brian Laundrie. He is the only person of interest in Petito's death and has not been seen now in more than a week. NBC's Katie Beck has more this morning on the search and the investigation. Katie, good morning to you.
Good morning, Craig. Investigators have been searching the reserve behind me for days and have turned up no new leads on the whereabouts of Brian Laundrie. New this morning, though, reports of Gabby and Brian's last days together in Wyoming as the search for answers continues.
With the nationwide manhunt for Brian Laundrie intensifying, new details emerging on one of the last known sightings of the couple together. A Wyoming restaurant confirming Gabby and Brian were there August 27th, arriving on foot without their van. In Laundrie's quiet Florida community, neighbors are personally invested in the case. Karen Aberts lives across the street from the Laundrie's home and remembers Gabby and Brian working on their van in the driveway.
Did it look like a happy situation?
It seemed like, you know, your normal young couple just kind of hanging out.
Abert says Laundrie and his parents would go on evening walks together. She says they seem like a friendly, normal family, but adds now she has serious questions she'd like answered.
Where's your son? And why aren't you seeming to be more concerned about where your son is and supposedly the love of his life, who is now no longer here? And how are you living with knowing that your son could be the one responsible?
Laundrie's parents told police Brian went to the Carlton Reserve with a backpack on Tuesday, September 14th. Driving a silver Ford Mustang authorities later towed from the family's home as evidence. A lawyer for the Laundrie family says when he did not return, family members eventually drove the car back from the preserve several days later. Investigators have spent 4 days searching the 25,000-acre wetlands with dive teams, canine units, and ATVs, but have turned up no sign of Laundry, a person of interest in Gabby Petito's homicide.
We've deployed numerous resources, and we are trying to cover every acre in this preserve.
Petito's body was found in this Wyoming campground 18 days after Laundry arrived back in Florida with the van they've been traveling in, chronicling their adventures on social media. He has not been charged with a crime and has not spoken with police. Laundry's parents, through their attorney, called Gabby's death heartbreaking. This morning, after multiple unconfirmed potential sightings, Laundry is still at large, and Petito's family no closer to the answers they so desperately seek.
And Katie, you mentioned that the officials are bringing in divers to search those swamps in the search effort, and that's a new detail. So what made them decide to do that?
Well, investigators aren't telling us of any specific piece of evidence, Hoda, but they have mentioned that 75% of the area they are searching back there is underwater. So if there is evidence beneath the surface, this is going to be the best way to find it. We are also here now as teams arrive again. They are going to be searching all day today. Hoda?
It's intense work. All right, Katie, thank you so much.
Also this morning, Al's busy tracking a new threat of severe weather. I can't believe we're seeing it, more rain down south.
That's right. We are going to be looking, and it's especially here in the Northeast, we really are starting to see this activity fire up. We've got a flash flood watch right now for, we're talking 35 million people. Low pressure spinning. You can see the rain all the way back through Chicago and Detroit. And we've also got the risk of severe weather today for windy conditions, 60 mile per hour wind gust possible, tornado or two. The hail threat is kind of low, but watch this system push in today. Heavy rain and storms for the I-95 corridor. We're seeing heavy rain right now down in the Washington, D.C. area. Flash flooding possible. Tomorrow, that system pushes up to Canada. The cold front pushes through the Northeast and New England. Things finally drying out in the Northeast, but we could see rainfall rates today, 1 to 2 inches per hour. We're talking areas that could see 3 to 6 inches of rain, and that's where we start to see all that flash flooding. That is your latest weather, guys.
Al, thank you. Coming up, new details in an infamous art heist. $500 million worth of art stolen from a Boston museum. The case was featured in a popular Netflix documentary earlier this year. Well, just ahead, the latest twist in this 31-year-old mystery that has investigators fearing it will never be solved.
Plus, with the spotlight on the Gabby Petito and Alec Murdoch investigations, interest in true crime cases being pushed to a new level. But why do so many people find them so fascinating? We will explore that question with this man, Dateline's Keith Morrison. But first, this is Today on NBC.
Or is it?
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/today. Just go to Indeed.com/today right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/today. Conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is how bad climate change is getting wildfires in the West, floods in the East, freezing cold in Texas. Billy Joel is going to have to write an update for 2021 and call it, actually, we did start the fire.
Oh, we're back, 7:30, a little late night humor, but actually important purpose. Seven hosts joining forces on Wednesday, last night, for Climate Night, using their shows to raise awareness about climate change.
Mm-hmm. It was organized by The Daily Show's former executive producer as part of Climate Week.
Yeah, okay.
In New York City, right. So good to see them using their platforms for good.
Yeah, let's get to your 7:30 headlines on a Thursday morning. We begin with this political showdown in Washington over efforts to raise the debt ceiling. The Treasury Department will exhaust its borrowing authority
sometime next month unless the debt limit is raised, posing the danger of a default and a worldwide financial crisis. But Democrats and Republicans in the Senate are locked in a partisan standoff. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says raising the debt limit is necessary to pay the bills that the country has already incurred, that it's not new spending, but Republicans are calling it a blank check.
Some sad news from the entertainment world this morning. Trailblazing filmmaker, writer, and actor Melvin Van Peebles has died. Van Peebles was known as the godfather of modern black cinema. He's credited with ushering in the blaxploitation film wave of the 70s. He was a musician and a novelist. He also wrote and produced Broadway musicals. He died Tuesday surrounded by his family in his Manhattan home. Melvin Van Peebles was 89 years old.
A minor league baseball game was interrupted in Buffalo last night when a very special guest made an untimely visit to the mound.
Then 15 as rookie the Bat Dog here at Salem Field tonight. A little over-anxious.
Just a little. That's a rookie, the official Bat Dog of the Trenton Thunder. That golden retriever appeared to be looking for a ball to fetch, but after a brief interruption, as you can see there, rookie back in the dugout. Mm-hmm. Play resumed.
Mm-hmm. His job's to get the bats, but I guess he went for the balls. All right.
Exactly. Trying to be helpful.
Yeah,
to be helpful.
Exactly. Right. Now to one of the greatest art heists of all time.
Yeah, it happened in Boston more than three decades ago. $500 million worth of paintings stolen from a museum there. And now, a man authorities believed may have had the answers has died.
Gabe Gutierrez joins us with more on, this is quite the head scratcher.
Yeah, it is. Quite a mystery, Craig. You know, authorities have long suspected that Bobby the Cook Gentile, a reputed mob boss, knew something about what happened decades ago. Now he's passed away, and investigators are wondering if some of the answers may have died with him.
It's the biggest art heist in American history. 13 paintings worth $500 million stolen from a Boston museum in 1990. Two men walked into the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum dressed as police officers and, according to a guard on duty that night, announced this is a robbery.
Boston, a quiet museum, a daring robbery.
The cold case, the subject of a Netflix documentary series this year. More than 30 years after the paintings were taken, the mystery remains unsolved. The frames still hang on the museum walls, empty. Authorities believe Robert Bobby Gentile may have had answers. The reputed New England crime boss died last week following a stroke at the age of 85.
But there's an enormous amount of evidence to point towards him having some knowledge of the crime. Now that he's passed, perhaps people will feel less inhibited.
Gentile's attorney telling NBC News, allegedly he was the last person to have possessed the paintings from the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum. He denied this till his death. Ulrich Boser wrote a book about the heist after years of research.
It seems very, very clear that he had some insider information.
Authorities searched Gentile's home multiple times, including in 2016. His attorney telling reporters at the time,
he has denied any involvement.
In 2015, the FBI released never-before-seen 25-year-old video, hoping it might help crack the case. But so far, the mystery has remained unsolved.
His passing does not hurt our investigation in any way, and it doesn't lessen our optimism that one day the paintings will be returned to the empty frames that are on the walls.
Okay, so they're optimistic, but with the crime boss dead, I mean, how do they hope to find any answers to this thing?
You know, authorities are hoping that now that he's dead, people might be more inclined to come forward, but the statute of limitations for the crime has actually expired.
Mm. So but they really want the art back.
Exactly. They want the art back. And by the way, there's a $10 million reward
for
information leading to the safe.
You would think that alone by now would have motivated someone to come forward.
You would think, but you really don't want to get too involved potentially.
Yeah.
You know?
But
Hoda made a good point. Like, what do you even do? How do you unload Rembrandt?
Who's going to buy a Rembrandt? Yeah.
So.
We're not in the market for it, so we wouldn't know.
Thank you, Gabe.
Thank you, Gabe. Coming up next, we'll go inside America's growing obsession with true crime stories. It's being fueled at the moment by the case of Gabby Petito. Others like it. We're going to talk about this phenomenon with Dateline's Keith Morrison right after this.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jenna Bush Hager from Today with Hoda and Jenna and the Read with Jenna Book Club. There's nothing I love more than sharing my favorite reads with all of you, except maybe talking to the exceptional authors behind these stories. And that's what I'll be doing on my podcast, Read with Jenna. I'll be introducing you to some of my favorite writers. These conversations will leave you feeling inspired and entertained.
To start listening, just search Read with Jenna wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, we are back, 7:39 now, with In Depth today and this morning, America's obsession with true crime. Mm-hmm.
With unsolved cases like the death of Gabby Petito and the mysteries surrounding the Murdoch family in South Carolina, interest is higher than ever before. So how are some of these amateur sleuths trying to help solve these cases?
Yeah, do they help? Do they hurt? What's the dynamic? We turn more to Dateline's Keith Morrison, who certainly knows and has covered a lot of these cases over the years.
A lot of these cases, and people are really interested with their computers at home and in helping. True crime is something, of course, we've been focused on for a couple of decades. And these are stories that are incredibly intriguing. You get hooked on them. They also bring attention to important issues, we hope. But the public's interest in true crime has just exploded. We want to take a look at why.
It's become a national obsession. Murder, mayhem, serial killers, and unsolved crimes.
I saw him from TikTok, which then made me call the authorities.
In the Gabby Petito case, amateur sleuths combed the internet for clues, even alerting authorities to leads that could help solve the case.
This is most definitely Gabby Petito's Ford Transit van.
These days, it seems we just can't get enough. True crime docuseries are among the most watched shows on streaming TV, turning small-town felons like the Tagger King into big-time celebrities. And it's not just television. 7 of the top 10 podcasts are now true crime. From Crime Junkie to the Murdoch Murders to the OG of them all, Dateline, which kicks off its 30th TV season this week.
They said, you know, don't go down the steps.
So, of course, you went there.
I did.
But why now? What's behind this exploding interest in murder? Our fascination is really nothing new and probably goes back a long way. And lots of people remember the 90s when everybody was glued to the trials of the rich and famous and those infamous grisly cases. But experts say hunger for this content is growing. Maybe an escape for people stuck at home in a pandemic? Or all this new technology that allows anyone to be an armchair detective?
You have this opportunity for people to exchange and debate.
For some, it's become a lifeline.
I am asking for your help.
Arizona mom Jessica Nunez uses social media to solicit tips to find her missing daughter, Alicia, who disappeared from their home 2 years ago. On TikTok, Nunez already has over 250,000 followers.
Someone has to see something or know something.
It is undeniably true that more men go missing than women, that people of color make up a disproportionate share of the missing. Those things are true too. And that they don't often get anywhere near the attention as cases like Gabby Petito.
I like to call it missing white woman syndrome, which cases become what we call the top of the wedding cake cases, the one, the smallest tier at the top of the cake that receives all of the attention nationwide.
It seems unlikely that America's voracious appetite for true crime will be quenched anytime soon. Or will it?
Oh, Keith, we just love to hear you tell a story like that. I mean, people do, they love to follow these stories, and more they're getting involved.
Yeah.
Yes. We have done stories with groups of internet sleuths who will get together, sometimes, whole teams of them, and they all work on their computers in different cities, in their bedrooms or their basements or the kitchens or something, and work on the strange little details of a case you never would imagine a person working on, but it would lead them to the solution of a 30-year-old or 40-year-old or 50-year-old case, and police departments are beginning to pay attention.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. So police are looking in at these internet sleuths and saying,
they are. And, you know, 20 years ago, most police departments would say, civilians stay out. We're the pros. Yeah. We'll do this. Yeah. But that's not happening so much anymore.
Keith, not to put you on the spot, but the point that you made at the end of that story there, this obsession that we have in this country with missing people, most of them are white women, attractive white women.
Yeah.
Why do you think that people of color don't get as much attention when they go missing versus, not to diminish, some of these other cases?
No, I understand. I what do I think? I know? But my thought is it's kind of it's the Little Red Riding Hood trope, you know? It's Helen of Troy. It's all the attractive white women over history who have gone missing, and everybody made a huge fuss about them. You know, this Gabby case, which is a, you know, very, very sad situation and one that everybody naturally would be interested in, exploded like there was some sort of weather pattern, you know, immediately descended on the country, and everybody knew about it within a matter of hours. And then, you know, what do the shows like ours do? Do you go along with that, or do you leave it alone?
All right, Keith. Well, thank you so much. We're happy that you're here.
Happy to see you, but even happier to hear you.
Yes. Oh, you're so...
Yes.
We are very happy to have you and all your Dateline friends. It's the 30th season of
I know it's
I can't believe it. We are going to honor you and look ahead to what you guys are working on this season.
Oh, yeah, we got
next
a whole thing
hour.
Planned for you.
Really?
Yeah, we do. You're going to be
very maybe
busy.
I overdid it. There's
well,
not like a cake or a
toast. No, we've got to go get a cake.
I think you're going to like it.
Maz, in the control room, we need a cake and a dinner. We need to, we're getting the cake.
All right, let's send it over to Mr. Roker, check of the weather. Hey, Al.
Okay, how many of us want to get Keith to do our outgoing phone
He's doing mine right now, so I already booked him.
There you go. All right. So we're taking a look at what's going on in our climate. Take a look at fall, okay? Since 1970, the average temperatures that fall has warmed up 4 degrees down in the southwest, 2 degrees in the Rockies, about 2 to 3 degrees in the northeast. In fact, 95% of the country has seen an increase in the average fall temperature. And in fact, look at Minneapolis, almost 4 degrees above average, 1.5 degrees in New York City, 3.6 degrees in Houston. And in fact, over the average, fall days, 18 days above average in Minneapolis, 10 degrees for fall in New York City, 28 degrees in San Francisco. And for October, the October outlook, warmer than average temperatures for October across 42 states. Rest of the country today, heavy storms moving into the Northeast and New England today, sunny and warm down through the South. More heat continuing out west. The Pacific Northwest looking pretty warm with the exception of Puget Sound right around there. Seattle, 68 degrees. I'm very excited. Keith didn't realize. He's impressed with our big blue.
Oh, man, I'm very excited.
We're just trying to impress Keith.
That's true.
We want Keith to love us.
We're all starstruck.
It's an actual map.
You want to go touch it?
I would love to.
Let's hear Keith do the weather.
No. You know, I did the weather once about 412 years ago. This is very cool. You can actually touch this.
Yeah, cool.
I'll be darned.
Thank you. Thanks, Keith.
Thank you.
For getting the cake and champagne. We'll be back. Still ahead this morning, we're going to have a new look at an iconic American love story 25 years after JFK Jr. and Carolyn Bessette's top secret wedding. But first, these messages.
Coming up, this is exciting. We've got some special guests joining us for Popstart.
Okay, hint.
Okay. Oh. Giveaway.
Oh, yes. Olivia Benson and Elliot Stabler, also known in their real lives as Mariska Hargitay and Christopher Maloney. They're in the house. Yay. Sneak peek at tonight's Big Law & Order premieres. The question, will they or won't they?
They will.
Make out.
They will.
Wow.
We think they will.
What's happening?